Good morning, everybody. Hey, it's Dave Weiner here at Morning Coffee Notes on, it's December 30th, 2004. And I'm coming to you from the side of Interstate 20, pulled off on the side of Interstate 20 in just east of Shreveport, Louisiana. So I'm like, Texas is behind me and the whole expanse of the southern United States is opening up in front of me, and I'm making really good headway towards the goal of being in Miami, Florida on January 3rd, which is whatever, today's the 30th, so today is 1, 31st, 1st, 2nd, it's 5 days from now, so we're in really good shape for getting there for the third, which is when Adam Curry is coming in. Adam and Ron Bloom is our third co-conspirator. And Ron lives in Miami. That's why we're meeting in Miami. We originally had thought to meet in New York, but I said, well, geez, New York's going to be cold on January 3rd. Let's go warm up a little bit. Let's go swimming in the Atlantic Ocean and eat some Cuban food and whatever. So anyway, I just started up the car. And while I'm getting on the freeway here, let's see if we can get some music here on the radio. You know, radio is kind of the same. Yeah, there we go. It's music from the 50s, I think. It's crazy. Yeah, I think that's Frankie Valli or something. Try this. 70s crap, maybe early 80s. Yeah, 70s. It's a cover of a Jimi Hendrix song. Or maybe that is Jimi Hendrix himself. No, it's a Jimi Hendrix cover of a Bob Dylan song. Who knows? Who knows? Hey, okay. This is new. That's called rap, folks, or hip-hop, or whatever. That's pretty cool. I'm looking for a song that's worth getting on the freeway to. Oh, country. That's interesting. That was a K-N-U-E, which is K, which means western half of the U.S. I think we're in the W range now. We haven't crossed the Mississippi River yet. We're like, if you were to draw a straight north line from where we are, it puts you somewhere like in western Iowa. So, and, okay, so I'm going to get going now. I'll keep talking. I have some notes here, by the way. So, it ain't going to be that much of a ramble today. We got some interesting stuff to talk about. Yeah, it's warm here. It's really warm. And the people are dressed warm, and I'm still wearing, like, my cold weather clothes. Sort of got a cold weather attitude, but man, when I get out of the car, it's warm. It's 64 degrees, and it's overcast, and it's got that southern smell to it. It's, and I like that. I like that. That felt like a bit of a homecoming. And what I didn't like was, I forgot everything is slow here. It's slow. People are, they're just slow like molasses, except when it gets to in their cars, and they drive like jerks. Not all of them, of course. But actually, most of them drive just fine, but some of them drive like jerks, I got to tell you. And enough of them, they're just like the Bubbas, I think, those types of guys. Anyway, so we're 82 miles, I'm passing a sign, 82 miles from Monroe, Louisiana, Monroe. I'm going across the northern part of the state. I had a choice. I could have gone down south, cut across to Baton Rouge, and then New Orleans, or, you know, even that would have been a tough choice because one doesn't have to go through New Orleans. You can have a bypass that goes on the north side of Lake Pontchartrain. And what I'm going to try to do, actually, is I'm going to try to find 2 days for me to cool out on the Atlantic in northern Florida, like Jacksonville, somewhere between Jacksonville and Daytona Beach. And I'm going to get some programming done, because what I don't want to do, what I want to do, part of the time that I'm going to spend with Adam, is I want to give him a piece of software to use, and then I can show him how to work around the bugs, and maybe I can fix some of the bugs, and then get his, you know, thoughts on how it could be improved, or where it's confusing, and stuff like that. So with the concentrated time I'm going to get with, like my primary user, or one of my primary users, I'm also a primary user, you know, it's worth doing a bit of preparation for that. And so I'm going to do that. I mean, I've got basically 4 days travel time before the meeting starts. So I'm going to use that time. Anyway, let me describe my situation. What I'm doing is, like, I'm wearing a headset with a microphone down in front of my ears. And theoretically, I'm supposed to be able to hear what's going on to the recording through my headset, but actually that isn't working for some reason, and I didn't check that out before I got started. But I can see that the bar, there's like a graph that shows what's actually being recorded. I can see that bounce up nicely and up and down as I drive, so I'm not going to worry about that. I've been passing the time listening to one audiobook, and it's been sort of like going on and on and on for a long time. It's Stranger in a Strange Land by Robert A. Heinlein, which is a book that I, like almost everybody else of my generation, read. I think it came out in the 60s. You know, I had thought, hey, you know, this is the unusual Heinlein book. Heinlein books are long-winded, and he's got sort of this, like, kind of, like, syrupy view of sexuality. There's always one sort of grizzled, wise old man surrounded by lots of sort of Amazon-like women who kick his ass, but he kind of likes it. And he's cantankerous, but they put up with it. And that's, I mean, how many times are you going to tell that story? Well, for Heinlein, a lot. So I had thought, I had remembered that this book, which was the first Heinlein book that I read all of them, basically, this was the one that wasn't like that. And, you know, sort of the classic, the epic Heinlein book is Time Enough for Love, and there were actually sequels to it, or prequels. Moon is a Harsh Mistress was also, I believe, one of the Lazarus Long books. The guy who lived, I mean, talk about cantankerous. He couldn't even settle on having a guy get old like we all do. Lazarus Long lived for like 1,000 years and then kept having to change his identity. There were like these people living amongst the human race who were, you know, what do they call them? Long lifers, I guess. I'm not sure. The rest of us were called ephemerals. And the joke was, the title of the book was Time Enough for Love, because what he said was basically, in the normal human lifespan, there barely is time enough for love, which is kind of a dismal thought, kind of silly thought, actually. You know, and how would Heinlein know anyway, considering that, you know, he was an ephemeral, you know, like pretty much like we all are. Hey, but it was kind of a neat idea. And Lazarus Long, cantankerous old coot that he is, surrounded by all, I mean, the definition of an old coot. It was a book that appealed to the adolescent mind, the concept. Anyway, to make a long story very, very much longer than it needs to be, a short story much longer than it needs to be. Yeah, there's a cantankerous old coot in the Stranger in a Strange Land. and his name is Jubal Harshaw. The narrator of the book, I'll have to look this up, and I'll put it in my notes on Scripting News. The narrator is very good, and he's not the best narrator, best reader that I've ever heard. That would be David McCullough, who read his, as far as I know, he's only done one audiobook, and that was his biography of Harry Truman. And if you want to read, if you want to listen to one audiobook, that's the one I'd go for, is the Truman book, because, first of all, it's a very nicely written book. Truman was an interesting guy, didn't have sort of like a predictable career, you know, it was kind of a surprise in a lot of ways to a lot of people that he ended up being president of the United States, and ended up being a good president of the United States, and McCullough wrote a really nice biography of him, and McCullough has one of these voices that it's just, you love to listen to it. It's just, it's a, like a fatherly, friendly, avuncular, authoritative, you know, he's, and there's a reason, I think, because he is the narrator of many of the Rick Burns documentaries, like on the Civil War, I think he's the narrator on that, and, he just does a lot of the WGBH productions. He's the narrator, so his voice is familiar and good, and actually good, beautiful, and just a wonderful book. Anyway, so this guy, I think his name is Hurt. For some reason, I think his last name is Hurt. And he's very good. He does Jubal Harshaw very well, and he does the Southern male voice, but I'll tell you what, this is the problem with all audiobooks that are like have dialogue in them, right? If the man is a narrator, okay, then when he does the female dialogue, he sounds like a fruit. It just sounds like a mincing, and then he tries to do several different female voices, and he just sounds like the same fruit, and I'm sorry, fruit isn't nice. Sounds gay. It doesn't sound like a woman. A man, I don't know, whatever. Well, maybe if, anyway, whatever. So it's a line that you kind of want them to have two narrators, one for the male dialogue and one for the female dialogue. And I've had the similar experience on the other side, listening to a book. It wasn't Ann Tyler. It was Susan Isaacs. It was a Susan Isaacs book. I don't remember what the title was. Listened to it as an audiobook, and it was narrated by a woman, since the protagonist, it wouldn't make any sense at all for that book to be narrated by a man, because the protagonist is a female, and a lot of the book was in the first person, as lots of Susan, maybe all of Susan Isaacs' books are in the first person. You know, and she could not do the male voices, and I don't know how to characterize what she sounded like. I kept thinking, boy, she's making the men sound like idiots. The women, of course, she could do all different flavors of women, all different styles. I mean, they're actors, I think, basically, but a very special kind of actor, and it's a tough job. And you got to give the guy a lot of credit. Because, it's funny. You don't really want, anyway, who would want to sound like that? Anyway, none of this stuff is on my show notes, so, and I don't know how long we've been talking, because I can't, like, take my eye off the road to see how long it's been playing. But I want to continue my series of What's Wrong with the iPod, you know what? I mean, it's like a little too negative, but I mean, we could say what could be better about the iPod would be another way of saying the same thing. But oh, the hell with that. What's wrong with the iPod? Okay. And I'm in a position where I discover more things wrong with the iPod than normal circumstances, because kind of when you're driving and iPodding. You don't have the same attention. You can't give the iPod as much attention. It, safety has to come first, right? So here's the deal, all right? So first of all, the other night, don't know how I left my iPod in this mode, but it has this very awful feature that at midnight, okay, if you happen to be up and it happens to be plugged into some kind of audio device, do this, try the experiment. Take your iPod, okay, and plug it into some headphones or into a stereo system and leave it somewhere where you can hear it and then go to sleep. Now, this is assuming you go to sleep before midnight. If you don't go to sleep, even better, because it won't wake you up. And at midnight, you hear this music. I mean, you hear this sound. It's like an alarm. It's like an electronic alarm of some kind. And then it starts playing, okay? And whatever it was that it was paused on, well, it just starts playing that. So what often happens is that you wake up in the morning and there's no juice in the iPod, because by playing all through the night from 12 a.m. to whenever you actually get around to, you know, turning it off, or not even sure we know how to turn it off anyway, but it just runs out of juice, so your battery's dead, it needs a charge. That's not so bad. But if you left it playing an audiobook, and audiobooks on the iPod have this nice thing where it remembers where you left off, so that, you know, I mean, well, you know why that's relevant, because if you were, like, on chapter 19, you don't want to have, like, to find the place to pick up the story every time you want to. I mean, you can't listen to it all in one sitting, basically, and why would you want to, you know? So, unfortunately, if we were happen to leave it on that particular item, and it's on that book, it's going to go ahead and add 6 hours to the reading, and, you know, that probably will finish that book for you. When you wake up in the morning, your bookmark's gone. So that sucks. And we need to figure out how to disable. I mean, I think what it's doing is making minor corrections to the clock. It's waking up. It knows how fast or slow its clock is. At midnight, every night, it sort of subtracts 1 second or adds 5 seconds or whatever, which, as far as I know, if my computers need to do that, somehow they do it without screwing me over. So it's got to be something that the iPod can do. And it sounds, it's like a bug. I mean, you know, it's a bug. It seems it would hit every user. So, okay, so that would certainly go not in the category of what could be better about the iPod, but it's certainly what's wrong with the iPod. All right, so I wanted to say that one first, because the next one happens after you're trying to fix that thing. Okay, so, like, all right, you get in the car and here's another one. All right, this isn't something that's particularly wrong with the iPod, but it's wrong in the whole scheme of things. Something that really is broken. It would be nice if somehow the iPod would know that you turn the engine off, like the CD player knows that you turn the engine off, and the radio does, or a CD player is a better example. It knows you turn the engine off, so that when you turn it back on, it picks up right where it left off. But the iPod, of course, keeps playing. And, you know, unfortunately, it happens. You go for a pit stop, and you turn the engine off, and you forget to, like, you know, go through the steps to cause the iPod to pause, which is, of course, too much work anyway, but that's another story. So you come back and 5 minutes have gone, or you don't know how long it's been. I mean, if you knew that you'd been gone for 5 minutes and 7 seconds, well, you would just hit the center button and scroll back 5 minutes and 7 seconds and hit the play button, and, you know, you'd be back. But you have to sort of fumble around in doing this. And what happens, now this actually happened to me, what happens if you discover this lack of, you know, attention, whatever, while you're driving, right? So you pull up the iPod, pick up the iPod, and you fumble around and you accidentally hit the leftmost button. And that's it. There's It scoots you all the way back to the beginning of the book, and there's no goddamn way to recover from it. It's the silliest. It feels so stupid at that moment, you know? And only for a second, then you say, well, if I was stupid, it was stupid because I bought this stupid device that makes it, has this very powerful function that can't be undone. You know, it's like computer design 101. I mean, Steve Jobs was the guy who made it. Maybe it wasn't Steve Jobs, but it was certainly Apple who made us all do undo, which was really difficult in the, you know, 1980, I guess it was 83 or 84, we got our Mac and we got the human interface guidelines. Maybe it was 85 when they said it. It was probably 83 when we got our beta Mac. And it said every operation is going to be undoable on this machine. And, you know, you can hear the programmers groan because, you know, hey, undo is hard. And number one. Number two is we don't know how to do it. We've never done it. So it's like saying, you know, we shall go to the moon. Okay, cool. Now what? So, but we did. And the web has a very basic, the web, I wouldn't have had this problem on the web. You could accidentally click on a link in the web browser and, you know, what do? You hit the back button and you're there. It doesn't matter how screwed up the website is. Some sites, like, really screw with the back button. Like, Expedia is, like, the most famous for that. But the pop-up menu still works. You know, you find the workarounds. But the iPod is so new and so not mature that it just doesn't have that kind of thing. So you're stuck there. And now it's time to pull over to the side of the road and, you know, a five-minute research project to relocate your position. You know, and somebody, of course, is going to send me an email now saying that there's some magic, you know, keystroke that you can do that will reveal that. Or if you had one of those, like, smart playlists, it would figure it out. Fuck that shit. I'm not interested in, like, obscure hacks, you know, that I can't even remember my goddamn phone number. I got a new cell phone on November 7th, I think it was, the day after BloggerCon, right? So let's figure that out. That's like almost 2 months ago. Well, they asked me my fucking phone number at every hotel I stay at. And I go, I don't know. I have a new phone. I can't remember it. It's 206 something or other, you know. I mean, so I can't remember those goddamn keystrokes. I'm sorry. I apologize. All I want to do is just listen to the book. So I hate it when software makes me feel stupid. So, that's that. And I'm going to, like, put another thing on iPodder.org about this and give everybody a chance to add there. I mean, it's cool because we're accumulating not just my peeves, but, you know, everybody. You got a peeve, there's going to be another place. Go to www.scripting.com for December 30th, and you should find some kind of a link there that gets you to a place where you can, like, read about this and then, you know, a synopsis of this. And you can then post your own pet peeves about the iPod. I'm going to have a little bit more to say about the iPod in a few minutes. But I'm going to skip over to something else. Tony Khan, who rapidly is becoming a really good friend. I can't say that I know him all that well. Tony is a radio on-air, what Adam would call an on-air personality, from WGBH in Boston. And let's see. So Tony is, I'm finding out all these different things that he does that I didn't know. I mean, I thought he was like Morning Stories, but then it turns out he's the alternate host on The World, which is a co-production of WGBH Boston and BBC. Not that I've ever listened to it, I mean, I've listened to it a lot. I know all the jingles and the, you know, the sweeps and the promos and whatever. You know, I could, like, recite, doesn't matter. Anyway, and so I've, no doubt I've listened to his radio voice a lot without even knowing that this is somebody who I'm, you know, I've gotten to know pretty well. And so I was talking with Tony yesterday. I was in Wichita Falls, Texas, and had found this absolutely charming lake in a place called Iowa Park. And I just seen it from the side of the road and turned around and went back. It was this, like, bird sanctuary with a nice little walking path around it. And a lake, of course, in the middle of it, with an island and a place to launch your boat, and just an all-around, just nice-looking place. And so I parked my car and put on my headphones and listened to some more Stranger in a Strange Land as I walked around. I found a guy, an old guy, wearing a cowboy hat, who I turned around and walked in his direction for a while. We chatted a bit about Texas, and that was kind of interesting because that was where I had my eyes opened about that, in a sense that, you know, there's the Texas we hear about outside of Texas, and then there's the Texas of people who live in Texas. And they don't generally know how they're viewed outside, and we don't know who they really are. And I'm getting the idea there's a big disconnect there. And, you know, it's possible that, you know, we're all Americans and we really would... Anyway, so it was kind of interesting talking with this guy. He voted for Bush, you know, and... but I can say that, you know, I don't... Well, it's hard for me to say that I respect that, actually. But whatever. He was a nice guy and we had a pleasant conversation, and then finished up the walk, and I'm about to get in my car, and the cell phone rings, and it's Tony Khan. And so I, you know, sit down in the car, we talk for a while. One of the things Tony tells me is that there's this science fiction book that he read like 25 years ago, and he forgot who the author was, and he forgot the title, but it was a great goddamn book, and he would kill to know what the title was. And the reason he asked me was because I mentioned that I was, you know, reading a science fiction book, and he wondered if I knew. I said, well, no, I don't know, but I can do a lot better than that. What I will do is, as soon as I get off the road tonight, I will post a thing on Scripting News saying that, you know, Tony Khan is looking for the author and title of this book, and here's the rough outline of the plot, which turns out I got it wrong. I got it backwards. It was about a humanoid, an earthling, who visits a neutron star, and they have life forms on the neutron star, and their lives are like vastly accelerated, so that you can't even experience one of them in our time frame. You can't even experience the personality of one member of the race, but you can sort of get an idea of what the race is about, because, you know, these neutron star characters, you know, they live and die in such, you know, such a short period of time. So I posted this, and within 5 minutes there were 4 responses, and they all agreed that the book was called Dragon's Egg, written by an author whose last name is Forward. I don't remember what the first name was. So I sent Tony an email, and I, including the query and a pointer, and I was kind of hoping he would click on the link and that his chin would drop the way mine dropped, but I don't think he quite understood what I had done, and so I wrote him. He wrote me a response, and he said, "Well, you let me know if anybody gets the answer," which of course told me at that point that he hadn't clicked on the link. So our email exchange went back and forth over a period of about an hour. So my response was, "Tony, they had the answer within 5 minutes, and blah 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 blah, and blah blah blah, and blah blah blah. And by the way, here's the link. Dave, P.S. Is it Dragon's Egg by this guy named Forward?" And so he clicked on the link. Apparently, well, first of all, he was breathless. You could tell that from his email. That, wow, you know, his search was over. It was the right book. This was the author. He was now going to get to read the book, which I'm delighted, because it's just nice when people get what they want. I mean, so many things that people want in life that are so unattainable, but it's wonderful when somebody really wants something, and it's simple, and they get it. And it's even better, for me, it's even better that I facilitated it. And what's even better than that, that I was able to show Tony something that none of the zillion articles about blogs has ever gotten, has ever nailed. You know, people always say, well, what's the business model? Why would I want to run a blog? You know, fuck that shit. Who cares? You know, I'm driving cross country, blowing lots of money. The money I'm spending driving cross country is like 10 times what it would cost to fly across the country. Well, so some business model, the business model is it gives me pleasure to drive across the country. You know, my feeling as, you know, sort of a person of means, you know, I have the means, basically, is that there really aren't enough ways to spend money that give you pleasure. So if you find one, go ahead and do it. So, like, and Tony would say that, you know, basically, now he gets to spend $10 buying a book that, you know, is going to teach him something one way or another. Either his memory of the book isn't going to be as good as it as the book, or is going to be better than the book actually is, or there was some lesson in the book that he had forgotten and he's going to relearn it, or, you know, because he's reading it 25 years later and he's a more experienced person now and deeper and more appreciative of life, which is what happens as you get older, I think, for most people. Certainly it has for him. I know that because we've talked at length about that. So it's going to bounce off of him in a different way, and it's just, it's cool that, anyway, so the point was that, you know, isn't this incredible? I mean, I was fairly confident. I can't say I knew for sure that we were going to get the answer quickly or that we were going to get it at all. But when the subject involves something technical or something that involves, you know, careful research or thought, or something having to do with software or operating systems or hardware or gadgets or whatever, you can't beat the Scripting News readers. These guys are incredible. And number one, number two is they love to show off. They love to share what they know, and I understand that. It's sort of the impetus of blogging. It is just wonderful that you have some piece of information that somebody else wants, and it kind of means we can go forward now. You know, it's fun. I just helped you, and that makes me feel good. And maybe that's the business model of blogging. But and then there's more to it than that. This is the extra bonus. The sort of, I'm in Louisiana. In Louisiana, they would call this the lagniappe, which is sort of, a lagniappe is like if you go in to the grocery store and buy red beans and sausage, the guy goes ahead and gives you a sack of rice too. You know, this is a little something extra. That, you know, it doesn't have to cost a lot of money. It isn't the money that matters. It's just that it's a gesture of goodwill. It's a statement that the business isn't just about money. It's about, you know, it's about goodwill. It's about feeling good. It's about, you know, it's about having people think well of you. And so I think that in a way, a blog is kind of a goodwill machine, you know. And so, you know, Nick O'Malley, who is one of the most interesting guys, certainly brilliant and very, also very generous, and you know, met him at Dean headquarters. He was sort of like one of the system managers there, in kind of a loose organization. He was the kind of guy who would get things done, and I hung out with him at the Democratic National Convention. I'm going to definitely see Nico on my way up the East Coast, which is coming pretty much after I finish in Miami. I'll head up to New York, and he's in Washington, D.C. Anyway, he was telling me that basically that anybody who's in the electronics business, let's say like Best Buy, for example, they ought to be looking at a blog about gadgets or about washing machines or whatever it is they sell, about the having some role in getting that kind of information, building up that goodwill is so damn cheap, right? So anyway, I got lucky or whatever, saw the future a little bit early or just was interested in sharing data. So I've got, you know, 1,000 geeks coming through my site every hour, basically. Yeah, not every hour. Some hours it's less, some hours it's a lot more. Some hours it's a lot less, like I'm sure, whatever, you get the point. But so I put up the question, and yeah, there were four guys within 5 minutes that knew the answer, and it just kind of blew me away. And maybe this story will now get told because Tony is a WGBH guy, and they do dumb it down at WGBH. They don't go for this. May be too sophisticated for them, but it's a magnet. It's a research, a community, but it's a community, but it has leadership. In other words, it's not just that I don't think it is just that the question is out there, but it was, I think, specifically that I asked the question makes a big difference. So anyway, we need a word for this. It's we need a way to say, okay, this is, because we got through the I don't know who it was who came up with the term, we fact check your ass. We could probably find out. But it really has turned into one of the themes of blogging. It's the thing that impresses the professional reporters. It's the fact checking your ass was what happened to Dan Rather. His ass got fact checked a lot more quickly than anybody ever thought one's ass could get fact checked. I mean, it happens all the time though, and there's only certain kinds of this fact checking that the professional press is willing to even see. But it's been going on a lot longer. I mean, I could give you examples going back to the mid to late 90s of examples of really, emperor has no clothes, type stuff. But there's certain emperors that may walk around with no clothes that the press don't care. They go, oh, okay, fuck, I guess we kind of knew he was naked, but what the hell, we're not going to report on that. So now we come to, the last thing on my list. I have two more things. Let's go with the, okay, let's go with the less interesting one first. Or maybe it's more interesting, who knows, it's hard to say. I got an email from a developer who is, and he has a problem, and it was a problem that I'm having too, and I'm going to have to solve it as part of a bigger project that I'm working on, and he had some sense of urgency about it, and it was hard for me to respond with his sense of urgency because of what I'm doing. I mean, I'm driving, across the United States, and... but on the other hand, it gives me lots of time to think, and so I used a little bit of that time, and I think I came up with an answer for him, and in doing so, an answer for myself as well. So here's the problem. I've got a website. It's a blog. Doesn't have to be, but it is, and it's got an RSS feed, like they all do, or many of them do, and I'm now going to add what I think of as an OPML feed. All right, that's a kind of a new concept, but I think it's going to be interesting. A feed that is an outline. And so the question is, now I've got a white on orange XML icon, of course, on scripting.com, and when you click on it, it takes you to the RSS for scripting.com, which is www.scripting.com/rss.xml, right? So, cool. And so far, nothing surprising about that, all right? So now I'm going to add the OPML to the mix. And now the question is, what kind of iconography, if any, do I use for the OPML? Because now, let's pop up 1 second. What is the definition of that XML icon? And this is something that, well, for the most part, people do it right. I don't think most people understand what it means. Because it doesn't mean, here's my RSS. Although that's one of the things it could mean. What it means is, the page that you're looking at has an XML representation. And this is it. In other words, if you click on that button, you get to the XML representation of the data that's displayed on the page that you're looking at. So, in other words, the page that you're looking at is an HTML rendering of the content that's in the XML, which turns out to be a really useful thing because that happens a lot. And it isn't always RSS. See, that is the surprise for some people, but it isn't always RSS. If you go look at any of the directories on a Manila site, or many of them, not all of them, but many of them, on a Manila site, you know, the things that look like Yahoo directories with folders and links and stuff like that, you know, you often see in the upper right-hand corner of the directory display a white on orange XML button. And when you click on the button, what does it take you? It takes you to the OPML version of that. It's not an RSS feed. It's an outline, and it's an outline that is being rendered in HTML, and therefore the XML button is a well-understood thing. It takes you to the OPML representation of the content on that page that's displayed in HTML. So, now what? So, you know, what are our alternatives? It doesn't really make sense to, well, it's a tough choice, and I don't think there's a perfect solution to it, but I'm a real hard ass about diluting the value of what has become a standard by using it for purposes other than what it was designed for. In other words, and this is something that comes up like all the time in standard stuff, which is, okay, we establish a standard. It's done always. The only way a standard ever gets established is in a de facto sense. There could be an agreement beforehand. It could be a great momentous occasion. But until there's interoperable deployment of it, and that's the de facto-ness, it ain't a standard. There's no point even talking about it as a standard. There's no value to it as a standard. It's not a standard until there's de facto deployment. In my opinion, I know not everybody agrees, but that's what I see. I see whenever I've seen things declared to be standard, it's amazing how rarely they actually become standards. And then on the conversely, quite often the things that become standards, if you look to see how they came to exist, it was sort of like, you know, some nobody went first, and then the next guy decided, well, I think I'll just do it the same way he did it. And a third guy comes along and says, yeah, I'll do it the way these other two guys are doing it. And then before you know it, everybody's doing it the same way, and you get a standard. Now, unfortunately, a lot of developers don't like do that. They see something that a lot of people are using, and they'll say something like, well, you know, it's really early. You know, there are going to be 800 billion people using this stuff. Right now, there's only 100 million people using it. So it's still really early. So let's just fix all these things that I would like to work differently. And, you know, I hate when they do that. It's because their reasoning doesn't work. That first 100 million, even if it's true that we know for a fact or very strong evidence that 800 billion people are going to be using this, that first 100 million will determine have already determined at least one way of doing it. Now, the question is, do you want one way or do you want two? And if you want two, why not have 20? Now, there's just this great big difference between one and two. And ironically, the power to decide whether there's going to be one or two does not reside with the guy who went first. The guy who went first, who you know, had this random idea and thought, geez, it would be really good to do this, and then it caught on, has no power over what the second guy does. So the power to create the standard, ironically, does not lie with the guy who went first. It lies with the guy who goes second. And you keep like having it over and over again, Because let's say the guy who went second says, well, I really see the value in doing it the same way. So I'm just going to like accept the fact that this isn't exactly the way I would like it to work, but it's pretty good. It works pretty well. And it's just so much better to have one way to do it than to have two, that I'm just going to go with this way. All right? Well, and they sort of merge together and become one person, and we still have the second person, you know, coming up. And unfortunately, there always is two ways to do it, because there's always somebody that comes along who, and I wish I could get inside their head and figure out which is it. Is it they don't see the value in everybody doing it the same way, or they want to spoil it? I mean, I guess you get all different kinds. I don't know. Let's assume that they mean well, but, you know, in any case. So the XML, the white and orange, white on orange XML icon is like that, okay? So the first person to do it, to use it, I know who that was. That was me. I asked Brian Bell to design me an icon for this exact purpose, the one that I outlined before that says, okay, click on this link to get the XML version of the content on this page. Brian, I don't think, understood what I wanted to use it for, but I described it for him, and he just gave me back what I asked for. And then I proceeded to use it everywhere I had XML, and it caught on, and a lot of other people did it. Why? Because it solved an important problem. People needed to know how to get from the HTML to the XML. It's not an unimportant, not an optional thing, you know. And I would argue that that was really, people say, well, you know, XML, who knows what XML is? Well, at the time, there was a lot of hype about XML. You could pick up articles in Business Week and Fortune and the New York Times, and there would be Steve Ballmer going, XML, XML, it's great stuff. And Scott McNeil would go, whoa, we're going to win the XML wars with Microsoft. And, you know, it was like XML was everywhere, but it was nowhere because there wasn't any XML. They were all like talking about complete fucking vaporware. So I thought, well, wouldn't it be cool to actually like use the term for something real instead of just like this sort of, you know, vaporware stuff? And when people say nobody knows what XML is, it's simply not true. A lot of people were being told what XML was, and still are, okay? And so what's wrong with showing it to them? Now, okay, they say, well, they click on it, and they see this gobbledygook, and they think your site is broken. I've seen that. People say that. Well, I've had an XML button icon on my site for years. I have never heard that from a user. Never. Not once. No user has ever said to me, Dave, you've got something broken on your website. You know, if you click on that link, you get gobbledygook, and, you know, I'm really confused and don't know what to make of it. It has never happened, okay? Now, that's not to say that people don't report problems on my site. They do. And it's also not to say that sometimes they report problems that aren't problems. They do. That too. So I would say that unless you have some empirical, I mean real serious numbers that show that people actually do that, you know, think about not pushing that idea, because I don't think it's true. I think what happens is when people see something they don't understand on the web, they hit the back button. But for the people who do understand it, it's absolutely essential that they have some way to find that, you know, the XML version of it. All right. Now I've really, really, really beaten that into the ground, flattened it, run over it again, and flattened it and beaten it and whatever. There's no more life left in this. I've explained what the purpose of the white on orange XML thing is, and if you were listening to me, you understand. And if you weren't listening, rewind and listen to it again. Anyway, so now back to the problem. All right, you've got both a RSS and an OPML. So how do you do it? And here's my answer. Don't use the white on orange XML symbol. Don't use a white on blue OPML, because they're just not the same thing. So when you try to make it look like, okay, here's the orange version and the blue version, you're not doing it, because that's not what the XML button means. So what I would say is, look, it's great that you have both OPML and RSS. I don't ever want to say, like, that's bad. That's great. okay? It's great that you're supporting RSS, and it's great that you're supporting OPML. And if there's another format you want to support later, great, support that one too. Question is, how much of this do you want to present to the user? You know, and I don't know your user. So, you know, if your user is likely to... here's what I would do. Never mind. I'm not going to, like... This is what I will do, all right? Is I'm going to put the white on orange XML symbol on my site. I'm going to leave it there as it is right now, okay? And underneath that, and when you click on it, it's going to get me to the RSS file. Because you know what? That's the most important one. That's the one that's most broadly supported, and I don't want to take anybody off the path of finding that thing. I don't want to confuse them. And then underneath that, centered in small type, I'm going to have a pair of words, other formats. And it's a link. And it takes you to a page that explains what the other formats are. Because if you have a second one, you're probably going to have a third one. Or maybe you'll have a third one. And you're going to have that problem again. And you maybe you'll have a fourth one. You'll have it again. What are you going to end up with on that homepage? How many of those little weird icons are you going to put up there with terms? Now you're getting into terms, by the way, that a lot of people don't know. OPML, for example. XML they heard about. OPML, maybe not. And maybe that doesn't have to be on your homepage. But other formats, sort of like, and putting that right next to, right underneath the XML icon, I don't see how that could be confusing. In other words, what you're saying, you're actually helping the understanding of what that white on orange XML icon is all about. It's saying, okay, it links to a format. Underneath it, directly, physically underneath it on the page, other formats. There's another option, and I'm going to open this up for discussion. So, you know, tell me if you have a strong opinion about this. Maybe this is another way to do it. Is to put a question mark next to the XML icon, and that would then you click on that to get help, and it would explain what the XML icon. I don't like that. I don't like it because it's like, you know, help should be for help, and you shouldn't have to click on help to get information that you need. So let's go with the other formats thing. Alternatively, perhaps Brian could come up with, or someone else could come up with an icon that is more generic. Not more generic, but what's the right way of saying it? That says, like, here are all my formats. Okay? But it isn't a white on orange XML, and it isn't a white on blue OPML, and it isn't a white on green, whatever format, some new format I just thought up of, you know, ML. So, maybe that's the beginning of a discussion. It's something to think about, but let's not move too quickly here, guys, because whatever we come up with here, or whatever you just try, we're going to be living with it for a really long time. And remember, two ways of doing something is a lot more trouble than one way of doing the same thing. So it's worth putting in the effort to try to find that one way to do it. Okay, one final thing, and I think then I'm going to pull off the road and press the stop button and then look for a place to upload this, is voice control for the iPod. I mean, it's, you know, all the complaining that I do about the iPod, and it's like, I do a lot of complaining about it because it's, as Alan Kay used to say about the Mac, it's the first product, first computer worth criticizing. You know, or as all these Apple people had these great quotes, like Jean-Louis Gasset used to say, as the monkey climbs the tree, more people can see his derriere, or his bottom. he is French, very bright man, figures all this stuff out. So when we criticize the iPod, it's with the deepest love and appreciation, and hopefully, chance to become an even bigger fan. Well, okay, so here I am I'm wearing a pair of headphones. They're nice headphones. I can hear if, well, they're not working right now, but, I also have a microphone. So, and it's so easy to add a microphone to a pair of headphones. So how about like having two jacks on the iPod, one for headphone for output and one for input, which is the microphone. And let me tell you, so then what I would say is iPod and pause. Because I have to pause because I might say, I love my iPod, it's such a great machine. I don't want to go into command mode when I say that, when I say iPod in that context. I want to have to say iPod. And then it comes back and says, yes. And I say, Lady Madonna. It says, would you like to play Lady Madonna? Yes. And it plays Lady Madonna. Totally unambiguous request. I only have one song on my iPod named Lady Madonna. I think this is the answer. I think that basically, you're not going to come up with a great user. I mean, the user interface could be a lot better. My Nokia cell phone has a much easier to manage user interface than my iPod does. Much easier. And so, you know, we need to go look at some other, you know, examples and maybe prior art and see if we can't, like, pick up some ideas from them. But I think that voice and iPods are really going to work. Put a microphone on your headphones and start thinking about how you might ask the iPod to do certain things that are hard to express in gestures. Then think about how much work it is. You know, think about that Lady Madonna example and how hard it would be, how many steps you'd have to go through to get it to actually play the song. And so, can we do better? I think we can. Anyway, I've just pulled into a rest area and turned off the engine, and people are looking at me like, well, what the fuck is this guy doing? They probably just think I'm talking on a cell phone, so I'm not going to worry about it. Had a little bit of coffee. That sort of, like, makes it official. This is morning coffee notes. And today is December 30th, 2004. You can read my regular weblog at www.scripting.com. And my RSS feed is www.scripting.com/rss.xml. So talk to you all later, and have a great day. Bye.